Moncrief on News Talk.
Jonathan DeBurka Butler is with us once again to bring us stories from other parts of the world. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Germany is our first port of call. It's almost like a joke James Acaster might make, but it's more serious than that. But it is to do with Germans racing for sun loungers.
Yes. Now, I don't know if this particular German was contesting against other Germans, but the story is laced with irony, it has to be said. This involves a German tourist who won a payout of over 900 euros after he was unable to secure a sun lounger. And that's basically because other guests were apparently reserving them with towels. Now, this man paid quite a lot of money to bring himself and his family of four to Kos in Greece, the island of Kos in Greece, in 2024. Yeah. And he paid over $7,000 of 7,186 euros. So that's a fairly hefty package holiday. And he thought that, you know, he'd be fairly confident of going, if he got up at 6 a.m, he'd be able to go down and get a sun lounger. But he found himself on several occasions spending at least 20 minutes a day trying to find a sun lounger. And his two children had to suffer the humiliation of sitting beside the pool on a towel. So he wasn't particularly happy. He went back home. He complained about the package holiday and he got a compensation. He got a refund of 350 euros, but he felt that that wasn't enough. So he took it to court. Now, obviously, he felt he was going to win or German courts are cheap. It's a cheap process. But it seems that they agreed with him, right? So they said that basically, although the travel company did not run the hotel and could not ensure every customer could access a sunbed at any given time, the operator did have an obligation to make sure there was an organisational structure that would guarantee a reasonable ratio of sunbeds to guests. And they said that the tour operator had to top up the compensation by 900 quid.
Okay, so it was the tour operator he sued, not the hotel.
It was the tour operator that he sued, not the hotel. Although I think that probably the tour operator will now go to the hotel and say, it was your policy, or at least you said you had a policy, that tourists weren't allowed to go down and put their towels on the sun loungers.
Yeah.
And you did not uphold that policy, even after this gentleman complained. So that'll be up for them now to go to Greece and maybe sue the hotel.
It still sets an interesting legal precedent. Now, I know it's only in a German court, but perhaps I wonder, could this be extended? Because probably everybody who's been on holiday to some European destination has experienced this.
I would say they have. I know I certainly have. I think it's been going on for decades at this stage. I think there's places in Spain now where they're threatening to fine tourists 250 euros if they go down and throw the towels on the sun lounger early in the morning and then leave for an extended period of time. How they're going to monitor that, I don't know. But there you go. A precedent has been set.
Yeah, towel police. Right, go now to Portugal. And there's a probe in Lisbon.
Yeah, speaking of police, yes, this is overall 24 police officers are being held as part of an investigation into alleged violence towards vulnerable victims, what they're calling vulnerable victims, right? So this all kicked off in January of this year when two officers, young officers, they were in their 20s, were charged with torture, rape and abuse of power, okay? Now, their victims were amongst the most needy, right? So these were drug addicts, homeless people and immigrants, right? And Amnesty International, who have been talking about police corruption and police brutality in Portugal for a number of years, said that it's worth noting that these people were extremely vulnerable and that they were obviously frightened to take any of their complaints to the police because it was the police that was doing it. Mm. So this story got out, and as the investigation spread, there was more arrests. So 7 officers were detained in March, and then last Tuesday, a civilian and 15 more officers were taken in, and 2 of them are police chiefs, apparently. So it went up quite high. Now, it's not clear at this stage. We know that there was 2 stations involved. Now, these were not stations that were out in the suburbs, by the way. So this was in Rato and Barrio Alto. Have you been to Lisbon yourself?
I have, but I wouldn't know the area.
Okay, so Barrio Alto is very, very much in the centre. It's up the hills a little bit where those lovely trams go, and Rato's right dead set in the centre. So these are not, as I said, on the peripheries. They're not in the outskirts. But it seems that the incidents that took place between 2024 and 2025 happened in these two stations. What they did was they recorded this abuse as well, and they started sending it around on WhatsApp groups. It's inexplicable. I can't understand why anybody would do this, but they have done, and that has become obviously part of the evidence. At this stage, it's not clear whether the 24 police officers that have been arrested, whether they have been arrested for taking part in these alleged abuses, or whether it's for facilitating them, or for ignoring them, for not reporting them, or for sharing the WhatsApp footage.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've had problems over the years in Portugal with police and police brutality, particularly around what some people would call systemic racism. A number of years ago, I remember there was a story of a man last year, actually, Odair Moniz, a 43-year-old black man who was shot by a young policeman, and that couple of riots ensued off the back of that. And then 7 or 8 years ago, there was more riots after police went into a well-known area called Barrio da Jamaica, I think it's called. And they went in and broke up a fight, okay? But they took it too far, started fighting anybody who got in their way. That was then video, that was recorded, and that was disseminated on social media, and it all went from there as well. So there's a bit of a history there of police corruption and police brutality.
And yeah, what's interesting about this, maybe more than a little disturbing, is that it doesn't seem to be like one police station or the bad apple argument. It seems to be more widespread.
Yeah, well, it's a good point that you're making. Now, as I said, that the cases that they're looking into now are in two stations in Lisbon. But on the back of your point, those other instances the shooting was in another city for a starter. So the shooting in 2024 was in another city for starters. And then the riots that happened 7 years ago came from a different different neighbourhood altogether. Yeah. So yes, it seems to be quite widespread.
Yeah. Right, Singapore we're going to go to now, where they've brought in caning.
They have, or at least the headline in this story is slightly misleading in that they seem to be amending how they're operating, okay?
Yeah.
So what they're doing here is that male school students who bully others, and that includes cyberbullying, okay, will face caning as a last resort under new guidelines.
Okay. Now,
when I saw this story first, I was looking at the headlines in it, and it basically said that male students can now face up to 3 strokes of a cane under these new rules, but that's after all other things have been taken into consideration and all other measures have been exhausted, right? So they're basically saying they're going to look at the gravity of the misconduct, what sort of effect it would have on the instigator's mental health, whether it would actually help them to reform, shall we say. They're talking about offering counselling to them and this kind of thing. What's interesting about it is that it's a response to a problem that on the surface seems to have got a little bit worse, okay? So if you look at the statistics, there was statistics from 2020 to 2024, which basically said that there was 2 in 1,000 primary students had had a problem with bullying, right? And 6 out of every 1,000 secondary students, right? So that's 5 years from 2020 to 2024. From 2021 to 2025, it went up a little bit, okay? So 3 in 1,000 for primary school and 8 in 1,000 for secondary school. So you're saying to yourself, okay, it's gone up a little bit.
But it's not a huge amount. Yeah.
But what's changed? Social media.
Yeah.
Social media, things are being recorded. Humiliation is more widespread, more people are seeing it, and therefore the government has to be seen to be acting. And that, to me, appears to be what's happening here.
Yeah.
So what the Minister for Education, Desmond Lee, has come out and said is he's basically saying this will streamline, you know, and make it more streamlined across the board as to how we're going to deal with bullying in our schools. So that's what they're doing.
Is it caning for boys and girls?
No, girls cannot be caned in Singapore. So caning was introduced by the British when they were there.
Yeah.
It's one of those things that hang over from a long time ago. And they still use it as a corporal punishment for stealing and things like that.
Yeah.
For people under, males under 50. But girls won't be touched here. Instead, they'll be given different punishments like detention or suspension or an adjustment of what they call their conduct grade. And you can imagine Singapore having something like that. You've been there, haven't you?
Yes. Yeah, indeed,
and, and they're big on their rules. So this is, as I said, this is what they're doing. Whether it'll work or not is another story altogether. But I suppose they have to be seen to be doing something.
Yeah. Right. India we're going to go to next, where a watermelon market. Has it been closed up, or did it actually collapse?
No. Well, so what's happened here is that I'll start at the beginning. So there was a it's kind of got two strands, this story. So there was a family of four in Mumbai, which is in Maharashtra, right? The state of Maharashtra. And they had some friends and family over for dinner. There was nine guests over for dinner, and they all had the same food. They had a biryani and various different fruits and that kind of thing. The nine guests left, and then the family and four were left behind, and they sat down and they shared a watermelon. This was at about 1 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
About 5 a.m. they began to feel unwell, and all four of them were taken to hospital, and they died within a couple of hours of each other.
My
Very
word.
Sad story.
Yeah.
So it's a husband, a 45-year-old man, his 35-year-old husband and, sorry, wife, and their two daughters, 16 and 13, gone in a couple of hours. An investigation was launched to find out what had happened. The other nine guests were absolutely fine. In the meantime, the story got out.
Yeah.
And the difference was that they had consumed watermelon.
Yeah.
So this has led to panic amongst customers in the region, and they have stopped buying watermelons. So the market itself has collapsed. The market for watermelons, that is, has collapsed by 30%. So watermelons that were selling for between 30 and 100 rupees, so up to 90 cent, are now selling for 7 cent. And that's what happens.
Yes.
Again, social media, the rumours go around. So authorities are at pains to point out that, you know, they've taken away the intestines, they've done post-mortems on the four victims. At this point, there's no suggestion that it was anything to do with watermelon. And indeed, there's a doctor who says that it basically doesn't align with that food poisoning at all, what's happened. He thinks that it might be more to do with some sort of a chemical problem or chemical poisoning of some sort. At this stage, nobody knows what happened.
They haven't got the results back.
They haven't got the results back yet. Yeah. But it should be said the police are also investigating whether the family were under any financial or psychological stress in the period leading up to that.
Oh.
Now, you know, so they might be trying to veer away from this idea of food poisoning to, you know, maybe stop the watermelon market from collapsing entirely.
Does that imply that one line of inquiry is that it was a murder suicide?
You could take from that, I think, what you want, but I think that might imply that they're not closing that line of inquiry off.
Yeah. And do they put pesticides and the like on watermelons?
They do, yeah. And that was a question that was asked, but the food agency there and the Food and Drug Administration have basically said there would not be enough on it. All watermelons are covered in pesticides.
Mm.
It wouldn't be enough, or not enough would have got into the fruit to do any damage, and it hasn't done before. So,
yeah.
Strange one. So,
yeah.
But it's amazing, the power of social media and what it can do.
What an extraordinary story. Right, Canada we're going to go to finally. Is this now like an annual thing that somebody tries to secede from Canada? Because it seems to have happened many, many times before.
Yeah, well, Quebec was a good few years ago now at this stage. And that was close as well, I tell you. I think they only missed out by 0.0% or whatever it was back in the late 1990s. But anyway, Alberta is the latest to have a go at this, right? So, there's a couple of strands to this, right? So last week, the headline story here is that over 300,000 signatures were delivered to election officials in Western Canada, in Edmonton, is the capital of Alberta, as far as I remember. And the guy who was leading the thing, the Nigel Farage, let's say, of this separatist movement, Mitch Sylvester, got up and made a speech in front of his followers, and they cheered loudly. And what they're looking for, basically, is a very simple question, is do you agree the province of Alberta should cease to be part of Canada and become an independent state? This is what they want to get on, a referendum that they hope is going to happen in October. There's a couple of referendums happening around that time, and they want that to be on the papers, okay?
Yeah.
So the first question to answer here is, do they have a hope? Now, different opinion polls suggest very different tallies, right? So okay. If you look at one opinion poll, you'll get 18% of the population say yes. Another opinion poll will give you 41%, right? But most of them give you about the high 20s. So 25, okay. 26, 27, 28, that sort of figure. So at this stage, you'd have to say that they don't have a hope of getting this through. But it could be one of those things that once you have one referendum on it, you have another go again in 6 or 7 years. And they've seen how it's worked in with Brexit and whatever else is going on. So why are they doing it? Well, Albertans basically feel that they've been very badly treated over the years, right? They have quite a bit of oil. They think that they've never really been given the logistics or the facilities to exploit that to the best that they can. And they've never really been paid for it. Now, their farmers before them have always thought that they never got a good deal either, right?
Mm.
So there's always been an undercurrent of this going on, but it's never been majorly popular.
Yeah.
And they have no...
Are they French-speaking there or English-speaking?
No, it's English-speaking, in Alberta.
So the difference with Quebec isn't...
Culturally, no. I mean, I think what they'd say is that they're conservative and they're farmers, and that's probably culturally what there is.
That's
but
more
it's not
political
as,
than
it's not as. I don't think I'm open to correction on this, but I don't think it's as big of a gulf as Quebec would be. For sure. But anyway, so it looks to all intents and purposes that this is on the cards, right? That this referendum is going to happen. But interestingly, they've cleared the requirement for the signatures, but there are Indigenous groups. So there's one particular First Nation group called the Sturgeon Lake Cree First Nation group there that have put a stop to this. Basically, they say that they signed a treaty with the Crown, that is Canada, in 1899. Yeah. Their deal is with Canada, not with Alberta.
Yeah.
So basically, they're saying that Alberta or these separatists have no constitutional right to take a referendum or to have a referendum.
Okay, yeah.
Because they can't do anything with the land that we have a deal with Canada about. Does that make sense?
That makes sense,
So that's what's going on at the moment. They were successful in their court filing and they've got a temporary injunction while, well, the can is kicked down the road and something else happens to block the referendum.
So presumably this will go to the Canadian Supreme Court or whatever.
It's going to go all over the place, right? So they can hold the referendum, but there is no explicit outline for a process for a province to leave Canada, right? In 1998, the Supreme Court ruled that provinces can't split unilaterally, right? And they said that a clear majority in a province on a clear question creates an obligation on the federal government to negotiate.
Mm.
So it's not like the situation in Spain where the Spanish government have to give the Catalonians explicit permission to have a referendum or like Cameron did for Scotland.
Mm.
It's kind of the other way around in Canada. So they're saying, okay, you hold the referendum first. We'll see how it goes. We'll hold our hands up and turn away, and then we'll go to the Supreme Court and we'll battle it all out.
Yeah.
So it's backwards,
right?
If you know what I mean.
Okay, right. So what should we... and is there any kind of given... Are there any links between the secessionist and any political figures across the border south of them?
Absolutely. Well, you remember that late last year, these separatists met. There was covert meetings between these separatists and some people in Trump's administration.
Mm.
So that is a concern that these First Nation peoples have also raised. They said, it's going to be influenced from the south. They explicitly said that in their statement.
Okay, but these separatists haven't expressed any desire to become the 51st state of the United States.
There is some of them who have said that would be an option. I think there's three options on the board, right? Sorry to go on, I won't take long.
Yeah.
Join the United States, go fully independent, or join a confederation of Western Canadian states.
Okay, all right.
So that's what they're looking at.
Interesting times. Right, what events should we look out for?
Yeah, speaking of the President of the United States of America, Donald Trump is beginning his two-day visit to China. So he's going to meet Xi, is it tomorrow or the day after? Be worth watching. He desperately needs a win to take away from that. Something that he can, say, haven't I done brilliantly here yet again?
Yeah.
And if that doesn't go well, there is the ceasefire is due to expire between Israel and Lebanon on Sunday.
There's a ceasefire?
Indeed.
Yeah.
On Thursday, those two parties are due to hold talks in the United States about the quote unquote continuation of that ceasefire.
Yeah.
So again, will this all play into what's going on in China or what's going on with Trump and Iran and God knows? And then a little bit more laid back on Sunday, there's elections in Cape Verde and in Andalusia in Spain also. Local
right,
elections
okay.
There.
Chris is texting to say, back in 1949, my mother travelled by ship to South Africa. The ship stopped at Las Palmas, took on watermelons, amongst other stores. The elderly couple at my mother's table told her not to eat the watermelon, explaining that it's the only fruit that doesn't filter the water it's grown in. Many of the passengers were taken ill and a steward died. Hence, we as kids were never allowed to eat watermelon. And to this day, I can't bring myself to eat it.
There you go.
So interesting. We don't know if watermelons cause those deaths in India, but that's an interesting addition to all that. Jonathan, thanks a million.
Sure.
As ever.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.